working with all the priorities of the community, right? Whether it's the housing or economic development, healthcare, all of employment and training, you know, all fits within all of those priorities. But having the ability to decide, you know, how you have those priorities work together is true self-determination.
Hello, and welcome to our podcast series on future skills. I'm your host, Jamie Nordstrand. For years, technological advancements, climate change, and new business models have been transforming workplaces all over the world. The pandemic has simply accelerated those changes. Employers, workers, and job seekers are evolving and embracing the extraordinary opportunities that are redefining the future of Canada's labor force. On today's podcast, we will hear from Carrie Smith, a Future Skills Council member, Marissa Bennett, manager of the new Chalmeth Employment and Training Program, and Lucy Kiptana, Director of Operations, Culture, and Communications for the Inuvialuit Regional Corporation. Together, they discuss how key actions rooted in reconciliation and respect for treaty rights and traditional knowledge will help create a new environment for skills development, learning, and employment for all Indigenous peoples, a key part in building a learning nation.
Hello, my name is Carrie Smith, and I'm a member of the Future Skills Council, and I'm also the Senior Director for Métis Employment and Training with the Mount Métis Federation. I'm very fortunate to have worked for the Métis government in Manitoba for over 20 years, and specifically in the area of employment and training. Today, I'm happy to be joined by Marissa Bennett and Lucy Kiptana to talk about Priority 3 of the Future Skills Council report, which is focused on the skills development to support Indigenous self-determination. Welcome, Marissa and Lucy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Marissa?
Thank you so much, Carrie. My name is Marissa Bennett, and I am the manager of the New Chalmeth Employment and Training Program, which is part of the New Chalmeth Tribal Council that resides on the west coast of Vancouver Island. We currently manage the ICET agreement for the New Chalmeth people, and I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. It's Lucy Kiptana here in Inuvik, Northwest Territories. I'm the Director of Operations, Communications, and Culture here at the Inuvialuit Regional Corporation, which is the local ICET holder for Inuvialuit residing in the settlement region. We are situated in Canada's Western Arctic. We live in the region, Inuvik, Iqaluit, Ulahaktuk, Pawlituk, Sax Harbour, Tuktoyaktuk. So we manage the ICETS agreement again for Inuvialuit residing here, and we also work with our urban Inuvialuit on a day-to-day basis.
Wow, we've got three ICET agreement holders here. I think it'll be an exciting conversation. Before we get into some of the ICET stuff and the plan, you know, the whole Future Skills, a Learning Nation report that we had drafted, let's talk a little bit about what's happening right now. So since the pandemic hit, we've all seen our families and our communities really get hard.
I think, you know, looking at what the pandemic has done is it these systematic and structural barriers have all, unfortunately, have always been here. And what the pandemic really did is it really magnified these inequalities and social and health and employment needs, and really brought that to the surface of what we're experiencing right now. And I know with the New Chalmeth Nations, we have 14 nations, and 80% of our nations are only accessible by logging road, boat, or plane. And so being able to access those services during the pandemic has really limited when there's been voluntary lockdowns with nations to try and protect their elders and their children, and community curfews and enforced security. And so these things have really been highlighted and magnified.
Indigenous people in general are ones that visit, have a big social like circle, and talk to everyone and anyone. So the pandemic has caused people to separate and divide themselves, and, you know, keep really close just to their small circle. And it's been really hard on them mentally as well, because they're having to not have these social interactions that they generally do. especially when you're told to isolate in place and you're living in a remote community on the Arctic Island. Like, it's tough going because the community is their family. So that's a difficult part of it.
Our youth have really taken, a hit, but also a lead. You know, I know that for the Métis youth, I've been really impressed at, you know, taking the lead and trying to promote staying at home. And even though that is so hard on them mentally to be separated from their friends, going to school remotely. And I know that for our post-secondary students, trying to go to school remotely has been a huge challenge just because there isn't the broadband that they need to participate.
We have some major issues with internet, and we're really challenged with distance learning, which we really want to expand and offer, but it's a real challenge to deliver that.
And what I've noticed during the pandemic is it's really highlighted the lack of not only internet, but access to laptops and also computer literacy. So there's now this really need, because we are now moving into this very technology world, and we need to be able to provide that training and get our computer literacy up for our community members and be able to access affordable laptops.
The changes that are happening right now with technology are happening so quickly. And if our, you know, if our youth are not brought into, you know, the same level and opportunity and information that the rest of Canadians, they're going to be further behind moving ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I think what one thing we've noticed is that in some cases, the remote learning, or traditionally we weren't supporting correspondence programs. One, because our agreement required you to be a full-time student, but also because we felt that correspondence programs caused additional barriers to some of our students. But we are actually changing our way of thinking. There are certain programs that are only available through correspondence, and in some cases our students are doing okay. So, you know, it's also opening up our eyes to the fact that maybe some of our students do not need to relocate to go to school. Maybe we can work with them to put in additional supports for them so that when they can be successful doing it through correspondence at home. Just a totally different way of considering training some of our people.
Mm-hmm. I'm a huge advocate for bringing training into community, be it post-secondary level, trades level, even life skills, and actually building it in within the community. And yes, it's going to be 3 or 4 times more expensive than attending the local university that may be 5 hours away. But then you are building that community. You're not just changing the lives of those students that are in the program. You're changing everyone in that community because they have their support systems. They have the wraparound supports, and there is more chance of success for fulfilling the program, getting their ticket, getting their level 1 of carpentry. It's just, you know, we need to really start advocating to bring our major programs back into community with the support of the elders, with the support of the nation, with the support of the families.
Yeah, and that's something we've advocated for, that especially with the different levels of government and different education institutions in the north, is we found that many times we'd have training opportunities, or we'd have to build up the skill set of somebody that's in a community finance position, for example. They have to leave. They have to go for 2 months at a time to a southern location, leave their family behind. And many of these are working mothers with children. So what we did a few years ago, we came up with a program where we'd bring the instructor and the training supplies into the community rather than the people traveling outside the community. So more people could participate, and you didn't necessarily have to be working at the time to participate. If you wanted to build up your skill set for future opportunities, that's what we did, is we brought that instructor in rather than the families traveling out and leaving their support unit behind, worrying about what their children are doing that evening, or if they're doing their homework, or you know, getting proper meals and in place, all of those, you know, things that parents tend to worry about.
I love that too. I love that structure. I think it's more supportive. It's a good way for us to work with some of the training institutions and colleges, universities, you know, to better understand our communities and our people, and so that we can make sure that the programs are tailored to be supportive and they're not just off the shelf.
And I believe this really comes and moves actually away from co-development of our programs with universities, and where as Indigenous people of Canada, we are leading and designing and developing our own programs that are rooted in the foundations of our being. And that's really how we're going to have success with skills training in community, is it's the Indigenous people leading it, designing it, developing it.
Yes, and that's speaking to that self-determination, much broader than just the employment and training portion of it. But I think what you're speaking to, and I'm a big fan of, is giving, you know, the tools, the supports, everything that the Indigenous people need to create that path and to develop it as they see fit. That's where true success comes from.
By having First Nation Indigenous people lead and design and develop these programs in community, it has a greater impact on the full community. If you, for instance, bring a Carpentry Level 1 program into a remote community, it then, that benefit expands 10 times. Not only do you have people educated and trained and working full time, but now you are those people are now working on the housing shortage issues of the community. They are doing renovations on houses that may have multiple families in there. And so it really expands the benefit.
I think about what the work that we did a few years ago. We had a report developed. It was called Economics of an Inuvialuit Household. So we had somebody go in and study each community and how that community lived, what jobs were available, how people survived on a day-to-day basis, what was their economic base, did they hunt for subsistence, country food harvesting, did they rely on any federal or territorial supports? And in the report, it really highlighted that there was 21 professional jobs available, including teachers and nurses and RCMP and the local hamlet administrator and the heavy equipment operator. So all of these professional positions that needed some education and experience behind them, that certification behind them, to really good jobs with health benefits and pension benefits and a good salary. And, you know, we were thinking at the time, just imagine if that was 21 Inuvialuit from that community having all of those jobs. Just imagine the economic base of that community. All those people live there and die there, you know? And they keep that economic base within the community, and the cycle continues. And that's the vision for each community, is that all of these professional positions are filled by local people. Wouldn't that be an amazing, you know, amazing sight to see for every Indigenous community throughout Canada?
Well, you know, the Métis, you know, just recently, since 2018, there was an accord signed, but brought early learning child care funding to the Métis people. And this is allowing us to build our own daycares, which of course we are, you know, benefiting from those jobs, just as Marissa was talking about, you know, having the tradespeople involved and laborers, and of course, Métis contractors that can take on pieces of those jobs. At the same time, we are developing our own early learning child care curriculum to be shared and delivered within our daycares. We're training ECE workers so that we have our own directors and staff to fill these daycares to take care of our children. And this is just a dream coming true. You know, to be able to send your children to you know, daycare that supports your culture, your beliefs, you know, and really embraces them at a young age is so exciting for us. And all the spin-offs that come from that one agreement and that ability to make the decisions ourselves.
Absolutely. Those positions that we have within our communities, having those be filled by Indigenous people, but how do we support those other community members? There's only 21 jobs and maybe it's a community of 250. So how do we support everyone in that community? And I really push for supporting the Indigenous economies that are happening within that community. And so it may not fit to a labor market. It may not. And because I find that the labor market doesn't necessarily fit within a remote nation. It's not the same jobs available. So how do we support those people? We provide food safe and maybe catering training so that when there are meetings in town or workshops or things that those people can cater those lunches in a way to bring money into their household. So it's also supporting those, how do we support those other community members?
I am happy to see a much an agreement for Indigenous people, like the ISED agreement, that does allow a lot more freedom and flexibility in the way that we design our programs and deliver them. But, you know, we still have some room to, you know, for negotiation there. We're still being looked at like a service delivery. And for that, it does hold us back just a little bit to experience that true, you know, self-determination. We need, you know, we need to be able to decide for ourselves in a moment that, you know what, this is the best plan for this group of people in this community. This is the best, you know, supports that we need to provide for our people to be successful. Just recently, we were able to, for the Métis, of course, supports being a little bit different. We were able to build in supports for our students, like health supports, and having the ability to build more wraparound services for our clients, whether it's childcare supports or health benefits or, you know, additional travel dollars to get there, or, you know, a hotel to stay in because you're only going to be there for a few days. Those are the supports that we know our clients need, and we need to have complete and total freedom to provide that to them. So I do appreciate the advancements that this strategy has made.
You know, in order to have success in skills and employment training, we need the ability to listen to our communities, to listen to our clients, and then move forward and develop from there.
Yes. Yeah, I agree too. We meet with communities every couple of years and we have this big forum and we go through a strategic plan and what are their priorities, and they will talk about their needs of each community and what they see with education, with training, with health, with infrastructure, with language, with culture. It's them providing us with their priorities. And that's really important, is that we hear that and then we build on that and then we try to make that happen as best we can.
Absolutely. It's about being able to provide the services, well-being in the community. So actually going within the communities, listening, talking, discussing, doing the engagement like Lucy had talked, and really building from the community up and how we can make our services work for them.
I think we look at our education system as well, because we find that we continue to repeat these mistakes of our system, where a number of people are failing in the education system. We have low literacy levels and low levels in mathematics, and why is this happening, and why are children not attending school? We continue to work within a system that was never meant to be in and to work for Indigenous people. It was meant for other societies and other countries, and the system is just, it's proven time and time again over the last 40 years that it doesn't work for Indigenous people.
And I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's That goes right back to creating those training programs within our communities, because then we can tailor them to fit within our lifestyles and our schedules and our learning habits and our behaviors. So yeah, I love that a lot. I mean, there's programs that we've created, that really, have a mixture of classroom time and time out, doing other activities that help you grow as a human being and as a as a contributor to your family and to your community. Creating programs that are uniquely designed by us for us are definitely going to be more successful.
Especially when it's rooted in who we are as a people. So each of our programs are always going to be rooted in Nuchanoth ways of being. It's not just about getting a certificate. It's about that experience and having elders present within the classroom or respected people from the community sharing their experiences. It's about starting each day within prayer, acknowledging the lands that you are on, and also participating in some sort of cultural experience as in the classroom.
Working with all the priorities of the community, right? Whether it's the housing or economic development, healthcare, all of employment and training, all fits within all of those priorities. But having the ability to decide, how you have those priorities work together is true self-determination.
Something else that we are looking at too is increasing our mentorships and internships within our own organization and with community organizations, so that people coming into jobs and roles, once they've completed some education and training or some post-secondary pursuits, is come into the organization and work as interns or be mentored on a day-to-day basis, so they could also build up their self-confidence and the knowledge base within that role in each of our different institutions within our community and our region.
Yes, we are big on that as well. And since, last summer when COVID hit and it really, had an impact on employment, we pushed the summer employment for our students, and we found that some of the best opportunities were within our own government. And I think that internships and job opportunities, targeted wages, are all great ways of getting your community the skills that they need and the knowledge of how your leadership and government works.
It really supports that power of shared experiences, which I think is so vital in employment and training when you have mentorship programs or in internship programs. They're very, very rooted in being Indigenous mentorship programs. Within Nuchanoth structure, governance structure, it was mentorship right from the moment you were born to lead you into that role. So it is just further supporting our values of being Nuchanoth people. Especially peer programs in mentorship really stop those students or learners or community members falling through the cracks.
I think that's why it's so important to build that cultural aspect into all of our programming, and make sure that no matter how old you are, that you're proud of who you are and the culture that you come from. And, it really does instill a lot of confidence that just can't be created any other way. So by building that culture into the training programs, it really makes it unique and way more supportive for our people. Well, thank you, Marissa and Lucy, for joining me today. This has been great chatting with you.
Thank you. I am really happy to participate in this conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for including me in this conversation. It's just great to learn what's happening across Canada with Métis and Inuit and First Nations, and also how we're all supporting and building the road that encompasses Indigenous ways of being and employment and training.
Let's Talk Future Skills is a production of Employment and Social Development Canada. All opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the individual and not necessarily that of their employer or ESDC. For more information on future skills or to read the Council's full report, which includes a more in-depth perspective on skills development to support Indigenous self-determination, visit canada.ca/future skills. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and click the notification tab so you know when the next one is released. Thank you for listening to Let's Talk Future Skills.